Okay, so here we have this question, and I would like to find out if we have any volunteers. Does anybody have a sense of how to answer this question using the attributions of name, number, and the planet Venus? Remember that you have your choice of whether to use an orthodox or a heretical approach, the older or the newer form. Pregnancy is fine. Possibility and freshness are fine. Venus as a mother, or Venus as a flirt and a lover?
I'll try it.
Okay.
I think you can do it with all three of them. I think the name can pull together all the things that scare you to death about changing a job and hold you back from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the name, the Empress, could get hold of all of those little separate things that go out there, fear of poverty, frustration, being so, you know, dissatisfied, or just unfulfilled, whatever. The number, I'm going to go heretical here. Yeah, march forward, do it. You know?
That's really interesting.
And then Venus, if you have a absolute know what you want, not if it's out there, just do you know what you want? What is your dream gig? If you've got that in your head, I'd go for it. And if you don't, I'd get it in my head.
Well, let me ask you, Myra, do you have a dream gig? Do you know where you want to go if you could?
Interesting. To a certain extent, yes. But maybe now after listening, not as clearly defined as I should have it.
That seems to work perfectly with the idea of the Empress as potential. Not yet fully formed, not yet fully manifest, but opening up as a possibility.
Yes.
And what was said just now was that the Empress as a ruler, as one who pulls together all the disparate parts of things to make a single, unified, working empire, that is what this card offers you. Pulling it all together, seeing possibility, painting yourself a beautiful picture, and marching through the door that opens as a result. That seems to be what you were just saying, no? That Kel, right?
Yeah.
Is that more or less an encapsulation of what you were saying, or
yeah,
did I miss something?
Excellent.
Well, what do you think, Myra?
I think it's right on point. I'm actually smirking as I'm listening to this.
Now let me ask you, if that seems to be correct to you, if that seems to be right on target, does that answer your question? Is now the time, or do you need to wait a bit?
I like the way she said, get the ideal gig, like, in your mind, like, put it together, like,
mm-hmm.
every single little piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll do that first before I march forward.
Good idea. Then the question is essentially answered. Since you don't know the answer to that, you want to march when you have something to march towards.
Yes.
Good for you. A good answer, I think.
Should we do a different question on the same
attribute? Yeah, let's do another question on the same issue. Thank you very much, Kel. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have David.
Question, David.
We have a question here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I'm doing, I'm starting a beginning tarot class on the 24th of February. I'm interested in one of the energies surrounding its success.
Ah.
So you're teaching it?
I'm teaching it.
Well, it happens to be my birthday, so it's a very auspicious day.
Oh, that's nice. All right, so here's David about to start a new venture, and my sense is an important one for him. We've known each other for a while now, for a couple of years, and I think that this is important work for you, and you wouldn't be doing it as simply a hobby or something to pass the time. Or at least that's my impression. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this is important, and that means that out of all of the universe of possibilities that his world contains, he's decided to manifest this one.
Well, I'll tell you, just to be honest with you, I've had several classes before in the past, but this is one I've always done at night, and this one I'm going to try to do in the daytime to reach the people that I can't get at night.
Okay. So, guys, using the name which binds everything together into one empire, and the number which produces the freshness of possibility, and Venus, who produces the beauty of a beautifully painted picture of possibility. Using those three things, what are the auguries for success for David's venture? A volunteer?
I'll do it.
Good.
I think with Venus especially, you're going to find yourself attracting some surprising people, but the right people. It's like something you're going to thoroughly enjoy. And it's probably going to be quite profitable for you, too. Venus isn't great wealth, but it's always comfort. You know, it brings enough money in so that you're not going to have to worry about that if that's been a concern. And people are going to appreciate that you have gotten this class together when they can be there. And it's going to be different from the people that you have worked with before. But I think you're going to enjoy it tremendously.
So if I understand correctly, there will be financial reward, personal satisfaction, and a luster to the whole process.
Yeah, just kind of really neat. It's a good thing.
That what do you think,
great.
David?
No, I think that does sound great.
Does anybody else want to add anything to that?
Well, pregnancy lasts 9 months. I mean, there's the first trimester, the second trimester, the third trimester, and the act of giving birth. And it sounds to me like David's in labor.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ouch.
And, you know, he's got the blueprint, the DNA's all there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not his first child. And there's a lot of sunshine and daytime. Yet, the Empress is wearing stars, which are emblematic of the night. So I think both day...
Wait a minute, she was wearing what?
She's wearing a crown of stars, which are emblematic of night.
Okay.
Yet, there's this wonderful sunshine. So I think your day will be as successful as your night, if not more so.
Well,
that's very, very nice. I like that.
It sounds as though the general impression is that it's a well-starred adventure. It has good things going for it, good energy, good possibility, good chance of fruition on all sorts of levels. Does anybody have any argument with that? Does anybody see a dark side in this at all?
Well, you'd be, you know, getting lots of women.
Oh, poor David. Poor guy.
That seems to be the way of classes anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It does.
Yeah, well, Ruth Ann has pointed out to me more than once that it has been my karma to sit and talk, be surrounded by women who pay me for the privilege. It's really very funny.
It's true.
I know.
You remember, David, that that will also be a downside for you.
Hey, well, is your middle name for Venus? So your middle name?
Nah, it's very funny. It could be, I guess. All right. Anyway, so what I want to do now, we have four more attributions to do, and I want to do them now because, you know, time is definitely marching along. So anyway, now we're going to get to the next attribution, which is the attribution of the path. You remember that each one of the major arcana is a path on the tree of life. And that's a major, important piece of symbolism in every one of the major arcana, in fact, with all the cards in tarot. The path here is the path number 14. It's the key number, which is 3, added to number 11, which you may or may not remember is the formula for finding the path number. Path number 14. It's an experience. Remember that every path is an experience. It's not talking about something. It's not seeing something in the distance or watching somebody else do something. It's your experience of doing that thing. And this is the experience of a journey between wisdom and understanding. It's a very, very, very interesting journey. How do you travel between wisdom and understanding? Now, in our heresy, and it is a heresy here, this is the first experience, which means it's the first path, the first of the major arcana cards, that binds, holds together the right side of the tree, the left side of the tree, and the central pillar of the tree. The right, the left, and the center are bound together by this one path that crosses them all. These three things, these three pillars, the right, the left, and the middle, force and form and equilibrium, all the things that the tree of life eventually describes and makes possible, these three together are her empire. In other words, everything. We're talking here about the path as a binding quality, something that holds all of it from shaking and trembling and falling apart. With Hermetic Orthodoxy, all you really see here, they use this in one way. They use it to describe pregnancy. This path is the way to continue the idea of the pregnant empress by joining wisdom, which is called the father, to understanding, which is called the mother. And that's a whole other set of considerations why that should be so. Many of you probably are already familiar with that, and I won't go into it now. But you should be aware that the right side of the tree, which is the one end of the path of the Empress, is wisdom, and that is called the father. And the left side of the tree, the other end of her path, is understanding, which is called the mother. And the Empress is conceived to be the energy that moves between them. So she's basically seen as the energy of gestation. She takes the energy of the father, which is on its way to the womb of the mother, and she is the process by which that energy fulfills itself. That's how they see it. Not that either one is right or either one is wrong. Probably they both work well enough together. The only reason why there is a disparity between the Hermetic and the heretical view is only over this issue of Venus and what kind of femininity the Empress represents. Venus is probably the key to understanding why there is a Hermetic heresy. Nevertheless, it is possible to regard the Empress as running between father and mother and therefore being an energy of pregnancy. It is also possible to view the Empress as the form that binds together parts that would normally go separate ways and not hold together. The universe would fall apart without her. Those are the two different ways to understand the path. So remember those things when you are doing a reading. One, she holds possibility in her womb. She's a constant conduit between male and female energy and gives birth at a steady rate. The other is that nothing would hold together without her. The world would fall apart. Now, oddly enough, the idea that the world would fall apart without her particular brand of energy is a feeling that many, many people in a family have about a mother. Mothers are oftentimes seen to be the energy that holds a family together, without which each member would go its separate way. It's the mother that provides the holiday meal that brings everybody to her table. It's the mother that sets the rules of behavior by which her children are ultimately known. It's the mother that holds the marriage together often enough when things are going bad. It's the mother that comforts, the mother that heals, the mother that makes life in the family possible, and that makes a family possible at all. So not really, again, all that widely disparate in terms of the end of the journey. The heretical and the orthodox finally get together in terms of the way it works out. Bear that in mind. The journey, nevertheless, is quite, quite different. Now I'm going to deal with the issue of intelligence, the attribution of the intelligence of the Empress, which is a whole other story all by itself. The intelligence of the Empress is called the illuminating intelligence. Illuminating, what does that mean? Once again, we're dealing with issues of the path. One end of her path is wisdom, the father. Now, we call him the father, but there's another kind of description that we can give of wisdom, and that is a pure but formless light. Wisdom emanates light. There are no forms in that light. There are no distinctions in that light. It's just a beam of incredibly brilliant, all-illuminating light. It flows through the Empress. Now, one of the attributions that we do not work with, that we haven't worked with so far in this course, is the Hebrew letter that's attached to each one of these cards as an attribution all on its own. It is that letter that actually tells us a little bit about how the intelligence here works. Because the letter associated with the Empress is Dalet, spelled D-A-L-E-T-H, and it means the door. And the Empress is understood to be a doorway through which the light of wisdom shines into the darkness beyond. The Empress goes from the light of wisdom to the darkness of understanding. It is understood that understanding is a dark screen. It's literally darkness all by itself, and it's pictured as being black. And it's said that the light of wisdom shines through the doorway of the Empress and casts kind of endless shadow patterns on the screen of understanding. And this is understood to be the creative power of the Empress. Imagine, if you want to, a movie theater. And imagine that there is on one end of the movie theater a projection room in which a bright light will be shown through a film. And on the other end of that particular path is a dark screen on which nothing is showing at all, nor will anything be showing. It's a passive reflector. When the process of the movie begins, the brilliant light is shown through the endlessly moving images of the film and projects those images as colored images which dance and play and live on the dark screen in front of them. Now, the dark screen is passive, doesn't do a thing. The images that dance on it are not really real. They're images. Light, shape, color, and movement. But they tell a story. And anybody who's sitting in the audience gets completely wrapped up in the story, loses themselves in it, becomes captive of it, enjoys, suffers, laughs, cries, feels terrible, feels wonderful, elated and depressed. All those things happen because of the dancing images on the screen. And all of those dancing images are the result of light shining through the apertures of the film, which contain all the images. You can look at the process, the illuminating intelligence, as that process of projecting brilliant, beautiful, magnificent, scary, totally creative images on the screen of possibility. The illuminating intelligence is this power of the Empress, and that's how she creates. And by that way, what she does is she brings clarity. She brings sharp edges and real shapes out of the vagueness of the light of wisdom. And suddenly, the light makes sense. Out of darkness, not only comes light, out of the darkness appears real, clear, understandable, livable, workable sense. That's the illuminating intelligence. Then we're going to go on to the third attribution of this little section. It's called wisdom and folly. The function. The function of the Empress is a double function of wisdom and folly. Why that, of all things? There are a number of explanations, but the one that I'm going to give you here will be in keeping with what we've spoken about so far. We're going to invoke a new idea. We're going to invoke something that's not a new idea, it's an idea that we haven't spoken of yet in this course, and that's the idea of the journey of emergence and return. The idea that there are two directions that any path can take. In the case of Kabbalah, in the case of the cards understood on the Tree of Life, there is the idea that there is a direction that we call emergence in which the world is created. And that's called the journey of emergence. Literally emerging, the world emerging out of nothing. And then when the world is completely done and finished, there is the urge to return to its origin, to climb back up all the steps of creation to find where it came from, the journey back to the mystery of things, and that's called the journey of return. And different things happen at the different stages, depending on whether you're emerging or returning. So on the journey of emergence, the freedom and the sparkle that we associate with the fool, that's called folly. And that formless, wordless illumination that we call wisdom, that's the unfocused light. And out of that sparkle and freedom, out of that wordless illumination, the Empress creates, she makes, she forms the shapes that become the world. Out of sparkle and light. Out of scintillation and illumination. And you know that those forms and shapes that she creates, that she makes possible, that she envisions, they stand the test of time. They become, they remain, they stay, they ultimately reveal themselves as the reality that we know. Granted, on that level, on the level that she is at, they're all pure possibility. They haven't happened yet. They're flickering images on a screen. But eventually they become the world. And in due course, the world returns back up the whole process of creation, back to its origin, and on the journey of return, passing through the doorway of the Empress, her empire of shadow shapes, all the things that she created, all the clarity, all the images, all the beauty that she's manifested, melts once again back into a pool of undifferentiated light. The world disappears in light. No more shapes, no more images, no more drama. This is a state that we imagine when the saints, the sages, and the prophets speak to us about liberation, about union with God, all those kinds of things. When that happens, when you get to the point in the process of your own liberation that you melt into the light of origins, all the shapes of the Empress disappear and her empire disappears with it. Wisdom and folly. The lesson of wisdom and folly is that everything that's created comes into being for a while, comes into focus for a while. You can see it, you can work with it, you can play with it, you can live it. And in due course, all of that dissolves again into light. And there's nothing left. Everything that rises eventually dissolves. Everything that is eventually isn't. And it's all a play of light and shadow. That's the function of wisdom and folly. And finally, there is the title, the last attribution we're going to consider tonight. The title of the Empress is Daughter of the Mighty Ones. And who are these mighty ones that she's the daughter of? Well, they're wisdom and understanding, the father and the mother, the two ends of the path that create her. The Empress uses all the power of her imperial beauty to create the empire of the world out of her father's light and her mother's darkness. That's how she does it. That's what she works with. And then the power of her beauty, the power of her attraction, the power to bind, hold, as well as to create and maintain, those things hold everything together. The world stays in place. The world remains a world. It doesn't dissolve. It doesn't simply disappear, and it doesn't because she holds it together. She continues to do her work. She never fails. Her beauty never fails. Her energy never fails. Her freshness never fails. Her potential never fails. She constantly and continuously takes the flow of light and produces a world from it. And so she's called the Daughter of the Mighty Ones. Those are the remaining four functions. We did three to begin with, and then we did four. The four that we did to reprise are the path, which is the path between wisdom and understanding, the intelligence, which is the illuminating intelligence and the path of light, the function, which is wisdom and folly, the ability to create and then to dissolve, and the title, the Daughter of the Mighty Ones, the one who creates out of the light and darkness at the place of origins. Those are the four things that we're going to be considering. And what I want to do now is ask you for a little bit of commentary on some of these things. Tell me what you think about what you heard, whether or not any of this makes sense to you. And then we'll try and use it in readings. So, guys, does it make sense to you? Do these things sound like they get you anywhere? Sometimes, I'm going to say this because I know that it has been true in the past, sometimes philosophical or poetic or other kinds of language, they're interesting, they're pretty, whatever, but they don't leave you with anything. They disappear like mist in the morning when the sun rises. Sometimes it does stay. Sometimes it makes a point. Paul, what do you think about this? Does this leave anything with you?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I spent a lot of time developing this. I spent a lot of time saying it. There's a lot of passion and importance that I'd give to it. And yet, after it's all said and done, a half hour or 20 minutes worth of telling you these things leaves a little bit for you. Carol, what about you?
I think it opens up a great deal of possibilities and all in the good vein of things.
So as far as you're concerned, the Empress is a fine character, huh?
So far, yes.
So far, yes. And we're not going any further, so that's about it. We'd have to say, I guess if we took a vote, it would sound as though the Empress was a pretty decent sort. Nothing particularly adverse in her. Even if you were to turn her upside down as a reverse card, all that would happen would be perhaps that the flow of possibility was not as great as it should be, or the pregnancy was somewhat delayed, or some other such thing, but no more than a simple delay or block, nothing actually uncomfortable, dark, evil, or anything like that, that I can see. Cynthia, what's your feeling about that?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought my only questions is about that whole issue of beauty. But the Empress with Venus is not only her personal, individual beauty, but the beauty of empire.
That's right.
In that whole hierarchical, imperial shtick. And that's beauty in the eyes of everyone up until very recently.
Right. Let me ask you a question, Cynthia, just out of interest. Leaving aside any possible mucking up of the world that human beings do, if you were to look at the world in its pristine form, imagining it without the interference of human beings, would you consider it to be beautiful?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the world is exquisite, absolutely exquisite. So it's not only that beauty makes the emperor empire, beauty is her empire.
Right.
Her empire is beautiful.
So whether or not she's pretty or pregnant, or you find pregnancy attractive or not, is just irrelevant.
In a way, that's true. Yes.
She's just saying, you know, beauty is her empire, and indeed it is.
Okay. Now, having said some of those things, well, before I go on, actually, I should actually ask if anybody has any further, any questions about any of this. Can you, for example, Reese, can you make any use, do you think, out of the illuminating intelligence? Is there something about the nature of the casting of light through colored film on a dark screen that makes any sense? Can you use that, do you think?
Use it in what sense?
Can you imagine somebody's going to ask a question in a few moments? And we're going to need to answer that question using these four attributions: the path, the intelligence, the function, and the title. Just those four. We're going to leave Venus and the name and the number aside for a while and try to focus our attention on just the four things that we spoke about. Do you think you can do that?
Probably.
Okay. Just so long as you think you might. We're going to find out in a moment. Does anybody at this point think that those four qualities, those four attributions, the path, the intelligence, the function, and the title of the Empress, are things that leave them unable to proceed? Do you feel uncomfortable and possibly that you don't think maybe you could do it? I don't hear anybody answering. Either nobody's brave enough to say so, or everybody thinks, oh yeah, I can do that. So we're going to find out. So what we need to do now is we need to go to our golden chalice that Ruth Ann has in front of her and draw the name of a person to ask a question.
Okay. Margie.
Margie, a question.
Okay. My question is, what can I do to clear the way for my Tara studies? Because right now it's like I just have time to do my worldly duties, in other words, my day job, and so forth. By the time I get home and do my house cleaning and so forth, I'm too pooped to pop, so to speak, you know? And even the type of my notes is becoming a real hassle. It's a strain. So what can I do, or when's it going to open up for me to really get to it?
That's an interesting question. Now, it's actually a very interesting question in light of the things that we're going to be talking about. We're talking about experience of traveling between wisdom and understanding, of holding everything together, and of giving birth to a world of possibility at the same time. That's the path. We're talking about shining light in such a way that it makes real pictures, that it actually shows something, that clarity arises out of vagueness. We're talking about the function in which things arise for a while, come into focus, and then dissolve again. And we're talking about the title, Daughter of the Mighty Ones, the one who actually makes things happen out of wisdom and understanding, out of light and dark, and then holds it all together as long as is necessary to make the world operate. Given those things, who can give Margie an answer to her question? How does she find a place in her life, in her busy life, for tarot study? Anybody want to try that one?
I might give it a little shot here, because I had a feeling when you were talking about the illuminating intelligence. I remember what Wald and Ruth Ann had done during the meditations, where we went into a dark room, and we walked from the dark room into the light. And it just had that feeling to me that there was a point in your life where you need to take in a meditative state or through prayer, whatever works for you, and look from the darkness into the light or through the doorway into something that is not really clear to you right now, and just kind of imagine for a little bit what is out there. And just see that something's emerging and coming into being, and look at it really hard and really, you know, for a long period of time before you act on it.
So you feel that it's something that she needs to look at, think about, and understand before she works, before she does, before she acts?
I think she has to have a good idea where she's going, and I think that's the door that she's walking through.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You realize that the door that she would be walking through, the light is shining from behind her and is shining forward on whatever is in front of her.
But it's going to lighten something up at the same time. It's going to bring light mm-hmm. into the darkness.
You also realize, do you not, that the light by itself has no figures in it, has no answers.
Mm-hmm.
The darkness by itself has no figures or answers. It's only when the light passes through the creative imagination of the Empress that images appear on the screen, that possibility arises. So the question then would be...
Is not the wisdom and the folly at that point? It was the
yes,
everything.
That's right. Things come into focus for a while.
Right.
So the trick is, now what Margie has not been able to do, apparently, is she's not been able to bring into focus an image of how she can do what she wants to do. So far, it's all darkness, which doesn't yield anything, and light, which doesn't yield anything. It's the impulse to move forward, and the darkness that prevents her from doing it, with no intermediary interpretation by way of the Empress to give her a sense of possibility. So how does she find in herself? Because remember, it's only in yourself that you find these characters. The characters of tarot are inside, and when you ask a question about yourself, you're invoking the powers of the cards to answer for you. And those are your own powers.
Something?
Yeah.
This is Carol. I keep looking at the waterfall, and it's like just to go with the flow, and it's like new beginnings, like anything, any new project that we start,
mm-hmm.
and maybe make time on your lunch hour,
mm-hmm.
or when you're most alert or early in the morning, get up maybe a half hour earlier and focus on that. You can always make time. You can squeeze 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, and then it won't seem like a whole big bulk to do.
Let me ask you, Margie, do you find the idea of putting together a flow of possibility out of small bits and pieces of time, one, do you find it possible, and two, do you think you can work with that?
No, I don't. That doesn't seem to work for me, like 15 minutes here. But
remember...
Take 1 hour.
Okay, now the interesting thing would be, let's say that your day was a busy one, and you need 1 hour, not 15 minutes.
Right.
But the trick would be to envision a full hour being collected out of bits and pieces of time taken from other ventures. Your life is probably filled with things to do. Something that might conceivably take 1 hour might be made to take 55 minutes. And something that normally would take 2 hours might be done in 1 hour and 3 quarters. And if you take together the different parts of your day that are busy and make them a little bit more efficient, you might be able to put together 1 hour of time that you could devote to whatever you wanted. Not a matter of taking 5 minutes for tarot here and 10 minutes for tarot there. Take the time from all the different pieces and envision for yourself 1 hour's worth of tarot. Is that a possibility? Can that be done?
So you're telling me to create it, right?
That's exactly right. You'd have to be able to see it first. It would have to be a possibility. And now, if it doesn't strike you...
Yeah. It's not manifesting for some reason. I don't know if there's a block inside of me
mm-hmm.
or what, you know?
Well...
What don't you see when the light shines? If there's something that you don't see, maybe that's the thing that needs to give, rather than your tarot study.
I'm not following you.
Well, when that light shines in, you know, through the screen and it lights up the screen from behind you, it's going to light up certain things. What doesn't it light up? If whatever's not there would be the thing that I would consider dropping. I mean, you've got a lot of strings that you're probably holding if you're like the rest of us, and I'm sure you are.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where I'd start looking at, is there something that I could drop? Well, sometimes they're not, but... That's what I thought of when I thought of that illumination. what falls back into the light, what's no longer there anyway.
I'm working on that, seeing if there's some things that I'm doing that I don't have to do, but all these things seem to be have-to things.
Right.
Maybe it's a time thing, maybe the universe is telling me, you know, just to take it one day at a time, go with what's open to you right now, and then things will open up, you know, at the right time. This is what I'm thinking, but I would like to really get started. I'm really not sure, you know. I know what you're saying has some truth to it, and I know that it's within me. The blocks are within me. Everything is within me, but I don't know how to manifest, and I really, really want to.
Well,
I have to go shopping. You know, I have to do this. I have to clean.
Well, can I say something?
Yes, you can. Well,
you are pregnant, and if you're going to bring this to fruition, it's a 9-month process, let's say.
Yeah.
I'm using this metaphorically. Please don't take me literally. What I'm trying to say is you've started your tarot studies, so either there will be a miscarriage or there will be the fruition of the pregnancy. So
I don't want a miscarriage.
It's not necessarily your choice. We presume when we get pregnant we're going to, as you are, going to have this creation. You're going to have your tarot studies. And then we go into labor, and it's not in our hands at all. We're delivering one way or another.
Do me a favor, Cynthia, before you go any further.
Yeah.
Tie this in to the four issues that we're talking about here. Pregnancy is
okay.
Goes throughout the whole thing, but tie it into one or another of the things that we're talking about.
All right. You are the daughter of the Mighty One. You have the strength.
What I would like to suggest is two things. One, that you've already made some time, because look at what's happening here. You're here 2 hours
right.
On a Wednesday night. You found some time, no?
That's true, yes.
So that's one thing. So that should give you some hope. I mean, it's not as bleak or as, in quotes, black and white as it might seem to be. You found a way. You found 2 hours in a week. Granted, that's not a huge amount, but it's a lot anyway. It's more than you thought you had.
It is. Yes, you're right. You're right.
And second thing, using the idea of wisdom and folly, the idea that things arise in time and eventually fade, those things which are in focus at the moment, which are all the necessities of life, the things that have to be done and that soak up time like a sponge and don't allow you any other, that may, if you wish, begin to shift. As long as your focus shifts, because all we're talking about here is not really necessity so much as your sense of their necessity, and that is a matter of focus. And my sense is that the more you come to believe in the possibility of the study that you want to do, and the more beautiful it appears to you, and the more alluring and desirable it appears to you, the more that will come into focus, and the less other things will remain in focus, and you'll find your universe beginning to shift, and you'll create for yourself, out of your own picture of the world, and out of your own desire, a reality that doesn't presently exist, although it may take a little bit of time to happen.
That implies the magician.
Well, no. Well, in a way, but this is a little different than that, although there are similarities. It's not an act of will here. It's an act of creativity. It's an act of imagination. It's an act of beauty. It's a different focus, a different energy, although they have things somewhat in common. But anyway, let me ask you, Margie, how beautiful, how attractive, how desirable is study of tarot for you at this point?
Well, I'll tell you, what you said brought tears to my eyes. I love the tarot. The tarot cards I fill with just warmth, if you know, it's like home to me. I think I'm afraid, someone else said about miscarriage, I think I'm afraid that if I put all this time and energy into study and learning it, and then nothing happens, you know, poof, all that for nothing, you know.
Let me ask you.
Maybe that's a subconscious fear that I have to work on just to eliminate, because I do love the tarot. I think it's so beautiful.
Let
I think
me,
it can be so helpful to people.
Could I make a suggestion?
This Peggy?
It's Peg.
Yeah.
Under wisdom and folly, sometimes you need to, would this be possible to group things? For example, if I'm going shopping, I try to make it all in one trip.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm going somewhere, I try to organize it so things are grouped, and that takes less time. I don't have to travel, you know, 20 miles and then come back and then 20 miles again, because I've done it all together, and that it saves a lot of time. So perhaps a schedule or some sort of order. You
working on that. I'm becoming more organized. I'm working on it.
Here, what I would like to do, I would like to have somebody address Margie's fear that if she goes to all the trouble to organize her time, fight for the moments of pleasure and beauty that she sees in this, that somehow or other there's the risk that it might all come to nothing. Would somebody care to address that?
Not with the tarot, but with something else, and I think that's what's still there.
How could it come to nothing?
What is it that might come to nothing, Margie? I'm not sure I understood.
Well, if I go to all the study, taking the time to study and learn the tarot, the spreads and so forth, and being as good as I can possibly be, and then, I don't know, maybe it would just poof, and just nothing would happen, you know, it would just be gone.
What would be gone?
All my learning for nothing.
What would make it for something?
Well, to make it for something would be to be doing readings and being helping people.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
let me suggest
kind of deep stuff.
Let me suggest something to you.
Sure.
There are two rewards that come from doing something. One is the reward of an ultimate goal. You do something in order to arrive at a certain place and accomplish a certain thing. If you don't do that, then somehow it all seems for nothing. The other is the joy of the journey, the pleasure of the going, the pleasure of the doing. And that will never disappear. It doesn't really matter what happens down the road. The end result isn't the issue. The issue is the journey. So
right. So
it really is part of our current perspective on things. Most people nowadays have been seduced by the beauty of goals. The Empress has produced the idea in modern times that must achieve. And the beauty of a goal is that it drives you to accomplish it. And somehow or other, out of that desire, out of the beauty of that goal, so many things arise in the world out of that possibility. It's an amazing thing. But in the doing, you obscure the beauty of the journey. And it's perfectly possible to completely not even notice how you got there, just so long as you get there. And that is a terrible shame in some cases. So here you can use the creativity of the Empress, focus the light of wisdom on that portion of your creative energy which shows you the beauty and the pleasure and the desirability of the process. And to hell with the goal. If the goal happens, good. If it doesn't happen, who cares? Meanwhile, you're having a hell of a good time.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, that way, if you want to, you can put that into focus. And as you put that into focus, the other thing fades from focus. And the fear begins to fade right out of your life, and the pleasure emerges from it. That's the benefit and the value of choosing what portion of the film of creativity you want to shine on the screen of your life. So it's an interesting way of seeing that, and I do believe that you can use the allure, the sheer sexiness of what you want to do to produce the ultimate result of doing it. And that all the other things, the tyranny of necessity and the fear of failure, will simply fade from your screen. It just simply won't be part of what you're looking at. And that way you'll probably find yourself without a hell of a lot of strain and without much pain, doing precisely what you want.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That was a fun question, and one that we could apply with what we were talking about, those four attributions. What I would like to do now is take the last of our time. We have about 15 minutes, I think. I would like to take the last of our time and ask one more question, and this time use any portion, any or all of the things that we learned tonight to answer it. So, Ruth Ann, you want to draw one more?
Maris, would you like to ask a question?
Sure.
Okay.
My question is, what do I need to know about the choices I'm making for my daughter right now?
Okay. I always like to clarify those questions. And if you and I were sitting together, and you were a querent and I was the reader, and I would say, well, you are in the process of making choices, I gather. This is something that's happening?
Yes.
Okay. You are not altogether sure of yourself in this matter? There's some nagging doubt that you might not be doing the right thing?
Right.
Ah. But you're
there,
doing the...
There are a variety of things I can choose, and I never paramount choices like this.
Mm.
And I'm unsure that I chose the right path.
Ah. So you've already made the choice that you're talking about.
I'm in the process of making the choice, of getting information to make the choice.
Uh-huh.
And I'm leaning toward one way as opposed to another.
Okay. Let me see. Paul, we haven't heard from you a great deal tonight. Try it.
Decisions with the Empress. Use your wisdom to open up the door experience.
How would she do that?
Just to listen to herself, her inner self.
Okay, that's a contemplative process. And how would she use the attributions of the Empress to perform a contemplation of that sort?
I don't really know.
Okay, I'm going to let you off the hook, and I may come back to you if you want me to. But for the moment, let me go to, let's say, Kel. I haven't talked to you for a while. Kel, what do you think about this?
I'm going back to the first thing. I don't know why. I think that with the Empress, if you have put the consideration that you seem to have put in to all of this, that whatever you choose is going to be just fine. She holds it together. She keeps things from falling apart. She lasses all the disparate stuff. So I don't know exactly know what you could do, because I think that you're doing it.
Let me ask you, Maris, you're doing something. Has anything already resulted, or is it about to result from what you've done so far?
Well, yeah, sometimes, you know, things have a way of kind of choosing you instead of you having to sit and worry about making the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of coming about.
Are you choosing possibilities for your daughter?
Yes, in a way.
So, in a way, what you're doing is you're using the Empress's creativity, the Empress's power to open the door of possibility. But instead of using it for yourself, you're using it for somebody else. And that's where the fear comes from. Because you never really know for sure whether the other person is going to benefit by your choice of possibility. Do you have only a limited number of choices, or do you have a wide range of choices to choose?
It's pretty limited.
Okay. So then it's just a question of, inside of this group of things, which of these things you want to bring into focus? Which of these things you want to energize, and out of the realm of pure potential, begin to manifest? And you have to choose. Do you want to open door number one, door number two, or door number three, as they used to say? I can't remember the show that was...
Let's Make a Deal.
Oh, Let's Make a Deal, right, exactly. That's sort of like what it is. I heard somewhere once upon a time that when you don't know exactly what to do, when you have to make a choice and you don't know exactly what to make, you won't go wrong if you make the loving choice. And if you open up that door, there's very, very little likelihood that anything harmful will come of it.
It's more like I worry that not good things will come from it.
Mm. Well, you know...
My choice is I can stay the same and not do anything, which I don't really think is really a choice. I don't think that's a good idea. Or I can choose, you know, one path or another.
Mm-hmm. Well... If you use the idea that the Empress is fresh and that hers is the empire of possibility, and then you use the idea that what makes her empire work is the beauty of the picture that she paints, and that out of that beauty, all of the powers that surround her work to make it so. And if you use the idea that the journey is as important as the goal, and that all you can guarantee is the journey, you can't guarantee the end result, would it be acceptable to you to do that thing which you would consider the most loving thing you could do, to further that in the most beautiful possible way that you could imagine, to allow the possibilities of the beauty of that choice to shine in what you do, and to shine that light on the screen of possibility to make it real. And then if you do those things, you kind of just allow yourself to have faith in the process. Could you do that?
Yeah, I could.
That's one possibility. The other possibility is to try to nail it down. When we do the Emperor next week, we'll talk about that kind of thing, where you need to bring order and control into things, to know what you're doing in advance and to leave nothing to chance.
Right.
Well, so here we're talking, however, about the Empress. It is as though we have done a reading and we have drawn the Empress as the card to answer your question. We haven't drawn the Emperor. So you have now to make do with the invoking of this power of this card that has been picked up out of the deck by chance to answer your question.
Right.
And so the Empress is telling you, no, the empire that we're working here with comes out of the beauty of possibility, not out of the stringency of control. Not out of prediction, but out of possibility.
Right.
And the question would be whether you would have enough faith in the process of a reading to accept the message of the card that you drew. That's always a tricky business. When you do tarot, you always take the chance that the card that you pick will not be the one you want. So listen to the possibilities of the Empress here, and her particular empire, and her particular power, and see whether or not you can reconcile your fears with her openness and strength. Because as far as I know, this card does not guarantee for you anything at all. She cannot offer you guarantees other than you can make happen what you start to make happen. But your problem is you don't know what to start. Which door to walk through? Because once you walk through it, you know, past a certain point, the die is cast and you can't go backwards.
Right.
So now you have to pick one. And once you've done it, whatever one you pick, make it the most beautiful picture you can manage and manifest the most beautiful manifestation of that choice that you can make. And then let the die fall where it may. Let life take you where it takes you.
Is that kind of a message of, you know, make the best of whatever you get?
No. That's
I'm just asking as a question.
Oh, well, in a way, yes. But usually when somebody says make the best of it, they imply that whatever that isn't going to be really very good. It's like, oh, well, you have to make do. That's
right.
That's not making the best of it here means literally make it the best you know how to make it.
Right.
And then have faith in the creative process. Because what you'll be doing is not falling over a cliff. You'll be creating a road.
Right.
And then all you can do is march down that road with the assurance that you're working with full love, full clarity, full pleasure in the process, and faith in the world that it'll lead to good things.
Well,
yeah.
I just want to say, as an empress ruling over all these different kingdoms, so to speak, I mean, she has to make tough decisions.
That's true.
And tough choices. And she may not always be liked, but she will always be thought of as the concept of empire as beautiful. What I'm trying to say is the loving choice isn't necessarily the mushy choice.
No.
It could be a very tough.
Yes, it can. Yes, it can.
You know, that's all I want to say.
That's true. You actually reminded me of something here, and that is that in this capacity, Maris, you'll be acting as an empress, not as a scared person.
Right.
That's so,
right, I'll be an empress.
Yeah. If you decide to be an empress, that's all that it takes. Just act like one.
Can I have everybody in my house call me the empress?
Well, as a matter of fact, it may be, Maris, that you've inherited a title here.
No.
The Empress speaks, you know. Well, we'll let you off the hook with that. But it could be fun to tell your family about that and see what they think.
That's right, because then when they really get me going, I tell them to watch out because I'm going to take my magic wand and really get them.
That's exactly
so,
right. But you know what's funny?
It changes everything.
If you knew what you were doing, That's exactly what you could do. The Empress has the capacity to make the world the way she sees it. That's exactly what the Empress can do. That's her power.
But is it a case where how she sees it is a good thing?
Well, you know, that's the trouble with power.
Things that aren't necessarily the way they are or should be.
I know. Well, if somebody elected you king of the universe, that might be a good thing or it might be a bad thing. One of the problems with power is how you use it.
Yes.
And some empresses make a good life for everybody around them, and some empresses are hell on wheels. The power is there. That's the main thing. How you use it is up to you. And I think with that idea, the combination of power, possibility, faith in your choices, doing the things that you need to do with the understanding that you have the power to make them come to pass, although you don't have the power to guarantee good or bad results, you do have the power to make choices and to make the roads that extend from them. To know that is to know what the Empress can do. And when you do a reading and the Empress comes up, these are the things that I would like you very much to remember. It may be that there are many more lessons to be learned from this card. I wouldn't be at all surprised, but this is all that we have time for tonight. But anyway, before we go, I would like to... Well, first of all, I'd like to ask Maris, what kind of answer do you think you got to your question?
What do you mean?
How would you characterize the answer? Was it in any way satisfying? Was it in any way useful? Was it in any way illuminating? Even if it didn't give you a precise emperor-like rectangular, rectilinear answer, did it give you an approach that would be useful?
Yeah.
Good.
If I had drawn that card.
If you had drawn that card, well, you know what? You did.
Now I need to draw the card.
Ah, well, but
the card drew you.
That's right. It drew you. That's what it did. And that's really very funny because that's the way this particular class is working. Usually, you have a question, you have a known question, and you draw an unknown card to answer it. In this case, we have a known card, and we draw an unknown question to answer.
And the Empress attracts.
That's right. So she does. So let me ask you, if does anybody care to comment? Does anybody have any questions or comments on the things that we talked about tonight?
I thought it was a wonderful, very interesting class.
I'm glad that you...
I love the idea of orthodoxy versus heresy to begin with.
You like that idea, do you?
Yeah, I do. And just drawing that dichotomy. Oh, that just sets up so many possibilities.
Doesn't it, though?
For looking at things.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see the Empress again the same way we used to.
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that's what will happen. Actually, you have to remember that what we're doing here is we're working with secrets. We're not working with standard interpretation. We're not working with a picture. We're not even necessarily working with the absolutes of what anybody says. We're not working with lists of this card is about this and this and this and this and this and this and this.
And you're going to get pregnant and...
Exactly. Well, that's always a possibility, too, you know. It's not that that
isn't... I know,
but... That's not what we're talking about here, right? We're going on in a slightly different tangent. Because tarot contains mystery after mystery, secret after secret, wisdom after wisdom, depth after depth. And normally those things aren't even opened up for examination. So that's what we're trying to do here. And I'm also trying to do it in such a way that you will be able to use it and also remember it.
Nice. How old is your daughter?
12.
You guys go to the movies much?
Not too much, no.
Then I might want to do that once in a while. Just a thought.
That's funny. The Empress as a movie creator, huh? That's a very funny thought.
I see her that way.
Hmm. Well,
do that way. My daughter is a movie person?
Possibly. Or you.
No, I like the movies. I just don't get much time. We go to movies here and there, yeah.
Well, anyway, that's another story about what you open up as a possibility. What Reese was talking about there was opening up a possibility.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to thank you very, very much for joining this class, for taking part in it, for helping to make it what it was. And we will be talking again in a week. And when we do, we'll be talking about the Emperor. So good night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
Good night.